The corporate world over the past 40 years or so has been thriving on debt as government policymakers, particularly in the US and Europe, have inflated credit and money supply to keep the unemployment rate low. The economic community justified the use of debt by theorizing that changes in a company's debt-to-equity ratio had little or no effect on a company's cost of capital. But times have caught up with this use of debt as the coronavirus pandemic and the economic recession have caused a havoc among the businesses that have over-leveraged their balance sheets. Standard & Poor's recorded 88 corporate bond defaults through the second quarter of this year. Millions of smaller businesses have gone under. And Goldman Sachs has reported that the shares of companies with stronger balance sheets in the main have massively outperformed those with weaker ones. But the debt problem is all over the place. Sovereign debt throughout the world is pushing records everywhere. And we do see debt overwhelming many smaller sectors of the business community. In South Africa, we have a slightly different problem with the cost of capital being inflated by sovereign risk. While the rest of the world pumps more liquidity into the system, we're paddling in the other direction. Today, we unpack the cost of capital in this ongoing conversation we've been having, a sort of mini CFA that we're doing with Professor Brian Cantor, economist and head of the Research Institute at Investec Wealth and Investment, and David Holland, co-founder of Fractal Value Advisors, adjunct professor at the University of Cape Town Graduate School of Business. He's also served as a senior advisor to Credit Suisse Europe since 2011. Previously, he was MD at Credit Suisse in London, and he was in charge of Holt Valuation and Analytics, the research and development arm of Credit Suisse Holt, and ran their Global Custom Solutions Group. And he was also responsible for improvements to the cash flow return on investment framework for other Credit Suisse valuation models. Most recently, he's written a must-read book, Beyond Earnings. So welcome back both. David, kick us off here. Government ministers will be shocked by the economic value implications of sovereign risk and its impact on the cost of capital for business. The term cost of capital is often cited by investors and executives. Can you just explain to viewers what it refers to, and can you quantify cost of capital for South African companies?
Yes, well, thank you. It's nice to be on the program again, Michael. Thanks for having us. There's two types of capital. So you could say there's debt on one side, so secured debt, and equity on the other side. And there's a number of things in between unsecured debt, loan sharks, things of that nature, but really debt and equity. Now, with debt, let's say you're buying a house, you go to the bank, you have a certain amount of equity that you're going to invest in the house. You go to the bank, and based on your credit worthiness, they'll give you an interest rate. Okay, so that's going to be the cost of debt. So that you know very clearly, the bank doesn't want, the bank just wants the interest payments on the debt. They don't want anything else. In the case of equity, equity holders really want limited downside. So they want to be, lose it all and that's it, nothing more. But they also want unlimited upside if it's particularly positive. So let me give you an example. Let's say by day I teach and apply corporate finance, and at night I design and test surfboard materials. And I come up with this extraordinary material that's going to revolutionize the surfing world, and I find, the scent of the orca whale that I impregnate in the surfboard, and it scares away great white sharks. So this is a really valuable idea. I patent both of the ideas. So far, because it's been a hobby, I've invested my own capital. But at this point, I want to go big. I've got demand. There's a global audience for this. So I start a company. Let's call it Rip and Shred. And it's going to be all equity funded because it's a highly risky endeavor. Now, why do I need equity? Well, because I need to build a factory, production, inventory, sales staff. I need distribution. I need a private jet so I can fly to surf competitions. So I need a lot of capital to start this business, and I don't have it. Now, there I could go to a venture capitalist, but they're going to charge me too much. So instead, I'm going to go to the stock market and I'm going to issue shares. Now, the stock market, the investors are going to ask me for a forecast. So I'll supply them with a forecast. Now, there's a high level of uncertainty in that forecast. So they're going to do their own estimations on what the cash flows are and apply an expected return. So that expected return that they apply is their cost of capital. Okay. So there's, I can't go to a shop and say, tell me what the cost of capital is. All I can do is go and agree on a price which the market will set. So
Almost like
again,
a
it's
return on
been.
investment. If you, I've heard the two used interchangeably, return on investment and cost of capital.
Yeah, well, they would be really the same. So your expected return on capital would be, let's say it's 14% in South Africa. I'm going to see that the risk of whatever I'm investing in is indicative of a 14% return. If something's riskier, like a mining company relative to a food retailer, I'll have a higher or a lower expected return. So that expected return is really your cost of capital. Now, again, I can't identify what it is, but according to historical studies and market implied calculations, for example, that I do or Professor Damodaran does, it's about 5%. So the typical, because equity holders are interested in long-term cash flows, you would typically say they want at least the government rate. So the 10-year government rate, let's call it 9%. And a 5% equity risk premium. So for the JSE, the typical company should have a cost of equity, cost of capital of 14%. Again, if it's food retailers, that's less risky, so maybe it's 12%. For riskier companies like mines, it'll be higher than 14%. So 14% is basically the target that they need to get.
And that is a difficult target to achieve in this current environment. I mean, that CPI plus 10% effectively, if you look at why, where CPI is at the moment, not many companies delivering that. And so it's easy to see why companies are not investing either. But on that point, Brian, can you just explain here the relationship between cost of capital, investment, and South Africa's economy right now?
Well, the investor. Your pension fund or your mutual fund or whatever, insurance company has choices. So they can invest in government bonds, and they can get a default-free 9% for 10 years. So that is the part of the hurdle over which any private business looking for capital would have to leap over. So insurance company, certain 9% for 10 years as an alternative to investing in the shares of a business. And as David pointed out, the shares are more risky, the business is more risky than the government, so an extra 4 or 5% might be appropriate to encourage the pension fund to invest in equity, in JSE listed equity, which is quite, in many cases, quite liquid. You can actually sell it before the time if you wish to, but you would expect a return of 14%, and the shares would be priced accordingly. So the weaker the outlook. And the lower share price to give you this required return of at least 14%. And if you have regard, as you've mentioned, to inflation expected in South Africa, that's of the order of 5%. It's not just inflation. We're looking ahead. We say, well, in the bond market, we can establish that the inflation rate expected by investors in bonds is at least is around 5%. So you're talking about a required return after inflation, after expected inflation, close to 10% real. Now that is very expensive capital,
it's a
and
very high
it
hurdle.
discourages investment and has discouraged investment. There are very few companies looking at the economy going forward who would easily justify an ambitious capital expenditure program that required a return after inflation of around 10%. And it's not happening. And the share market reflects that. The share market reflects the limited opportunities to earn rates of return that are well ahead of the returns available in the bond market. And so I would say that is the essence of the South African growth problem, business is required to earn a real rate of return of around 10%, which is extraordinarily difficult to achieve. Hence, very limited capital expenditure, which is an essential ingredient in the growth process. To grow an economy successfully, you need successful businesses, and you need businesses that are encouraged to invest in future output of goods and services.
And that's also why the long end of the yield curve is so important. I just want to stop you there, Brian, as we're approaching the end of our first half. And then there's also the equity risk of rip and shred, maybe entering into a market where all the great white sharks disappear that you've got to compensate shareholders for. But David, I mean, just looking at the impact of cost of capital, what impact would changes in the cost of capital have on the valuations of South African companies that we see on the JSE?
As Brian indicated, the extra risk that South African investors demand is quite high. So there's different ways you can look at it in order to understand the South African sovereign or specific risk. You often look at credit default swap rates. So we know for the 5-year. So that's basically an insurance. How can I guarantee against the risk of South Africa defaulting on its government bonds or hyperinflation happening? So that's running at about over 3% now. So that's already an additional premium that you have to pay relative, or is expected relative to the US and relative to developed markets. Now there's no reason why it shouldn't be as low as 100 basis points or 1%. Okay, so we're really wide, and that's highly indicative of junk status. Again, this relates to, you know, government policy and being able to implement what it says it's going to do. But to quantify it, according to my calculations, if you could reduce that sovereign risk by better policy and more trustworthiness, you would get a 14% increase in the JSE, in the typical stock. Now that's 1%. We should really be aiming for a 2% reduction in the sovereign risk, again, through better policy, smarter implementation. Well, according to my calculations, you're looking at basically 40 to 70% increase in the value of the JSE. That's before you get all the other benefits of lowering the hurdle rate for investments. So you'll get higher reinvestment, you'll get greater hiring, you'll have more taxes, you'll get all those additional benefits that create a virtuous cycle and pull in more investment. So if we can get 2% off this rate, just through better policy and smarter behavior, you know, 40 to 70% right away.
David was explaining how the cost to insure against defaults, the CDS spreads, was at around 300 basis points, and we should be bringing that down to about 100 basis points. When did it shoot up like that? It sounds to me like that this has been a relatively recent development.
Well, it's interest rates, cost of capital, as indicated by the sovereign risk premium has significant increased this year. I mean, if you go over the years, the South African sovereign risk premium, that is what we paid to issue a dollar-denominated bond and what the U.S. government was paying for five-year money, that difference order of 1 to 2%. And it was more or less around that range at the beginning of the year, and then shot up. And at the height of the COVID crisis, it went up the bond yield on South African Yankee bonds went up over 6%. But then came back, but has only come back part of the way towards 4%. So with the US 5-year bond yield offerings less than 0.5% and South African bond yield offering over 4%, there you get a sovereign risk premium of 3.5% or so. So that's a real extra return that investors are demanding of the South African government and hence every other participant in the South African economy. And the reasons for this seem clear enough. And that is the market is factoring in a higher probability that the South African government will not be able to fund its expenditure over the long term without resort to printing money, which would mean over the long term higher inflation. It would mean a weaker rand, and all these unfortunate aspects or a heightened prospect of deteriorate markets into the cost of borrowing for the South African government, that is for the South African. The dangers of the debt trap have become more imminent. And the South African government has to, if it wants to bring down the cost of capital, if it wants economic growth led by private sector investment, which is the only way you're going to get economic growth. It is essential for the South African economy to deliver improved living standards for all, especially poorer South Africans. It's vital that investment, capital expenditure by the private sector be encouraged. And that means bringing down this cost of capital, bringing down, in the first instance, the rates of interest at which the South African government is forced to borrow at the longer end of the bond market. And the longer end of the South African bond market to this day is a market, unlike, in fact, the state of the bond markets in the developed world, where you really do not have a market. You have central banks controlling interest rates across the yield curve. But that is not the case in South Africa. We're paying up for long-term money, and having to, in fact, satisfy the concerns, the deep concerns of the global investment community, that the South African government is not capable of controlling its expenditure, or will not be capable of controlling its expenditure over the long term, in line with the ability of the economy to deliver tax revenues.
On that point, David, to bring you in here, what does government still need to do? We've had the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan. We've had the right noises made with regards to targeting the public sector wage bill. That's now gone into arbitration and mediation. What else does the market need to see to be assuaged of its concerns that government could potentially default in the future?
Yeah, well, the market and investors really don't like uncertainty. So everything you can do to make decisions, even if they're bad decisions, or let's say not economically sound decisions, but as long as the market knows what the decision is, I think we still have a lack of execution from the government. So yes, there is a lot of talk, but think about electricity, for example. Companies have been saying for at least a decade, let us generate our own electricity up to 10 megawatts without restriction. And still, although government says, well, we're going to let them generate their own electricity, still it's only they have to get nurses' permission from 1 to 10. Those are, I think, relatively simple things that you should be able to allow, and basically indicate that things are happening. Things are happening. So that really, we just need to see execution, I think, and of course, as much smart policy as possible.
And that slope, Brian, of the yield curve, obviously, it means a lot in terms of indicating as well to international investors that we have this increased sovereign risk in the country. But what does it mean for banks and their customers, that slope of the yield curve? What is that currently telling us in South Africa?
Well, isn't something unprecedented, the steepness of the slope? In other words, the difference between the cost to the government of borrowing for 10 years and borrowing for 3 months, of the order of 6% extra. So borrowing long term is very expensive for the taxpayer, and the interest expense becomes a growing burden on your budget. Now, the COVID crisis has complicated this enormously, just as it has done everywhere else. COVID meant much less economic activity, much less revenue for the government, therefore, and more spending by governments to offer relief. Hence, the borrowing requirements of governments have increased dramatically through the crisis. But in the rest of the world, it's been regarded as perfectly legitimate and appropriate, and I agree with that. That in this crisis, the best way to fund your deficits and your extra spending is the cheapest way, and the cheapest way to fund government spending is to print money, and you print money by buying government bonds. The central bank who creates money can buy government bonds in an unlimited way, and by so doing keep down interest rates and keep down the cost of borrowing, so that in fact you funding the deficits. Now in South Africa, we and the Reserve Bank have decided that is not a good idea. I think it would be a good idea. The trouble with South Africa is, with its tarnished reputation, to adopt quantitative easing on the scale that they've done elsewhere, money creation on the scale that they've done elsewhere, would perhaps be regarded as a sign of, so caught in that sort of catch-22 situation, doing what would be right for the economy now, threatens your reputation over the long term, and we haven't been able to really close that gap,
that credibility gap,
and hence the enormous cost of borrowing long term compared to borrowing short term. My recommendation to the South African government has been to face up to this reality, this crisis. Borrow as much as you can at the short end, and that means from the banks, and try and convince the world that you will get it right, not over the next 2 years, but over the next 10 years. And get it right means, I think, in its most essential form, showing high discipline over spending on the people who work for government. The employment benefits of people who work for government in South Africa have improved dramatically over the years.
Brian,
and much of the increase in government spending has taken that form. So you've got to show that you can discipline your spending on wages and other employment benefits of the people who work for.
And on that point, the IMF have suggested that we need to be borrowing more to support a counter-cyclical growth recovery, but not then spending that extra money on employees of government, spending that money on infrastructure. And that's really what it boils down to. Very interesting conversation ahead of that all-important mini-budget next week. I'm afraid the finance minister faces Captain Yasarian's choice in that catch-22 that Professor Brian Cantor just enunciated. Thank you very much, Brian, economist and head of the Research Institute at Investec Wealth and Investment, and David Holland, a co-founder of Fractal Advisors. Only a credible commitment to restraining government spending over the longer run can lead South Africa out of this stultifying burden of very expensive capital.